The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purposes of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these televised proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Orders of the day, oral questions put by members. The time now is 3:02, and we'll go to 4:32. And I'll recognize the leader of the official opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Premier. Your government has chosen to cut the amount of money that families who qualify for the HAARP program will receive. Last year, an eligible family could receive $450. This year, that same family will only receive $200. That amounts to about a half a tank of oil or about 2 weeks of heat. We are receiving many calls from families worried about this cut. We know that this cut will result in families looking for other sources of help. And one of those sources will be the Salvation Army's Good Neighbor Energy Fund. So my question to the Premier is, how much money will your government be contributing to the Salvation Army's Good Neighbor Energy Fund?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think as everyone knows, the cost of oil in the province has actually dropped over the last year. Cost of electricity went up, so what we did is we balanced out what was needed among the various consumers, made the program more equitable. There will not be a contribution from the government to the Salvation Army this year.
The Leader of the Official Opposition on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, last year 1,400 families got help from the Salvation Army's Good Neighbor Energy Fund. They were also eligible to qualify for the $450 rebate under the HAARP. It was obvious that cutting this $200 will have a huge impact on this family. And now that your government is also abandoning the program, the Good Neighbor Energy Fund, from the Salvation Army, I want to ask you the question, Mr. Premier, why are you abandoning those families who need our help the most?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I pointed out, what we did was rebalance the program to make sure that it adequately met the needs of all Nova Scotians. The fact of the matter is that since last year, the price of home heating oil has gone down, the price of electricity has gone up. This program is designed to recognize those fundamental changes.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on your final supplementary.
The Premier knows these are two different programs. One is administered by the Service Nova Scotia, and the other is administered by a non-profit organization in our province, the Salvation Army. Mr. Speaker, he knows that these cuts will have a devastating impact on the Nova Scotians who need our help the most. He made a decision. His government made a decision to set aside $341 million to pay a bill to universities in advance. They set aside $81 million to buy land across this province, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Premier, I want you to be able to stand up and tell those Nova Scotians who will be cold this winter and those children who will be hungry while you abandon them.
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. What the Premier also knows is that two-thirds of the community plan that is operated by the Salvation Army is still intact, including $400,000 contributed by the province.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is to the Premier. A review of the list of the MLAs who have been given department assignments indicates that no member has been appointed to work with the Minister of Education. Recognizing that this is the second largest department of government and recognizing that labour and workforce development is also the responsibility of that minister, will the Premier tell this House why such an important department as education has been overlooked in these assignments?
That's the way you wanted that.
The Honourable the Premier.
Well, I'm glad to see that the leader of the Conservative Party is lobbying on behalf of the Minister of Education. The reality is, Mr. Speaker, we allocated out ministerial assistance ships to look for specific areas that we wanted to have some additional help in, and those were the ones we assigned.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party, on your first supplementary.
Thank you, and I am lobbying on behalf of any Minister of Education. Mr. Speaker, in the press release on June 29th, the Premier said that these MLAs would, and I quote, oversee policy and program development that helps government keep its commitments. Will the Premier be specific with the list of commitments that have been assigned to these MLAs, whose mandate it is to make sure they are kept?
The Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the member opposite for the question. Of course, in each case, the particular departments have particular program reviews that are underway. They have particular projects that they are pursuing. So the individual assignments between ministerial assistants and the particular departments would take place as a result of consultation between the minister and the ministerial assistants. So they would be different from department to department.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And the quote did say government commitments, so I believe the Premier would be well aware of government commitments that need to be kept. Press release of June 29th states that the MLAs will, and I quote, build relationships with important stakeholders. My question to the Premier is this. Will he table in this House a schedule of meetings where the MLAs have met with the stakeholders and identify the stakeholders who participated?
The Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, of course, I suppose we could find that information by going department by department. I know that certainly with respect to my ministerial assistant, he's met with various Aboriginal leaders around the province to assist me in my duties with respect to, as a minister responsible for Aboriginal affairs, and that would be true throughout the departments. I can ask the individual ministers if they can find that information. It's certainly nothing that would be a secret. It's part of the normal operations of governments. Despite what the member for Yarmouth thinks, meeting with members of the community are not secret meetings.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Service, Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, we all know that actions have consequences. For instance, this government's decision to cut the amount given for heating under the HARP program for families with low incomes is having consequences across this province, Mr. Speaker. For instance, Mr. Speaker, the food bank in Glace Bay. The coordinator of the food bank, Patty Hurley, is already preparing to see an increase in the number of people needing her help because of this cut. My question for the Minister, Mr. Speaker, is why is this government choosing to reduce the support to families who need it the most and download that responsibility to community organizations?
The Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The HARP program is a little bit more than it was 2 years ago. We looked at the cost of fuel from last year to this year, and it had gone down by half. So the program is reflective of the economy. It's reflective of the times. Electricity costs have gone up, so therefore that's reflective, and oil has gone down. So
the Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia.
So what we've done is we took the program that was with. We took the program that was offered in the budget.
Okay. Thank you, Minister. I'll recognize the Honourable Member for Glace Bay on your first supplementary.
It works in the House of Assembly. Thank you. Mr. Speaker, $250 $250 is not a lot of money to the people who make decisions on that side of the house, but $250 can be half a month's food for a family trying to make ends meet in this province, and that's why the Glace Bay Food Bank knows what to expect. So my question for the minister is, what steps are being taken to help those organizations, such as food banks and churches, who are going to suffer the consequences of your actions?
The Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate the question. As you know, everyone in this House is concerned about the well-being of Nova Scotians. I don't know how that specific question applies to my department. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, that specific question applies to her department, her cabinet, and her government, because you made the cut, Madam Minister. That's why it applies to you. There are 350 families from Glace Bay and surrounding communities that sought help from the food bank last year, and sometimes they were sent there by the Department of Community Services as a last resort because they had nowhere else to go. Now, this year there's going to be more, and it's because of that government's decision. My question for the Minister of Service, Nova Scotia, what message do you have for those people who will have to use the food bank in Glace Bay because of your decision to do away and lower the heating rebate?
The Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. There is no specific answer I can give to that particular question coming from Service Nova Scotia. If you don't mind, can I please ask the Honourable Member of Community Services?
Yes. The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. What our government has done is widen the scope of finances to be made available to more Nova Scotians, and that is because we are looking at the fact that the oil costs have gone down, but there's many, many people that actually only utilize electricity, and those are many people that are vulnerable and need some help with their electrical bill. So actually this provides more help for more people, and community services is there for each and every person that comes through our doors, and we work with them on an individual basis. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Digby Annapolis.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister of Health. Or Minister of Health, yes. Excuse me, Mr. Speaker. Yesterday, the Minister of Health played mediator. She called a representative of the island's liaison committee in advance of question period to protect herself in case a question was asked. She then commented to the media that she wants the DHA and the community members to get together, but only to explain the situation, not to fix it. Mr. Speaker, what the minister is unaware of is that this is not good enough for the community. They see this minister as someone who is able to do better. So my question to the minister, why is the minister refusing to address the situation herself when it comes to the issue of the nurse practitioner on Digby Neck and the islands?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. Mr. Speaker, as Minister of Health, I am not the employer for the health care providers at the clinic in Digby Neck, including the nurse practitioner. The employee-employment relationship is between the district health authority and the individual that the community are advocating for. And the decision to terminate employment at the end of a 12-month probationary period was made by the district health authority. And I'm of the opinion that the district health authorities need to be accountable to the community as much as the Minister of Health. And I would like to see the community and the DHA sit down and discuss their differing perspectives with respect to what has occurred there. And I understand that that will occur quite rapidly, and I await the outcome of those discussions and will not predetermine what the outcome of those discussions will be. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Digby Annapolis on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, let me, in a few words as possible, outline the frustrations of the people in those communities. They see the minister ultimately responsible for the health and well-being of 1,500 people in that area. The island's community health center has been in the past a revolving door for nurse practitioners. They come and they go, and they come and they go, creating further frustration in the community. They once again feel without leadership from the minister, the provision of primary health care to the residents will be ad hoc. There will be no certainty. There will be no commitment to that community. So my question again, given that the minister is ultimately responsible for the delivery of primary health care in this province, why has she been unable to put even one Department of Health solution on that table?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I want the Honourable Member and members to know that I've spoken with the warden in the area. I've spoken with representatives of the Community Health Board in the area. I've spoken with members of the Community Liaison Committee in the area. And I've spoken with the District Health Authority CEO and personnel for the area. Mr. Speaker, there is an employee-employment relationship here between the District Health Authority and a member of the staff at that clinic, or a former member of the clinic, and I believe that the most productive thing that I can do is to get members of that community and the District Health Authority to sit down together at the table and have a fulsome discussion and see where that discussion leads, Mr. Speaker. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Digby Annapolis on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Minister of Health, at the end of the day, whether she likes it or not, is responsible for $71 million that goes to Southwest Health. Mr. Speaker, this community sees nothing but uncertainty again, an uncertainty that existed under the previous government and one this minister is content to allow to continue. Our area of the province has been particularly hard on nurse practitioners, and this situation, if not changed, will make it hard to recruit more nurse practitioners, both locally and provincially. So my question is, will the Department of Health take control of the money allocated for the island's community health clinic in order to provide stability and ensure that a nurse practitioner who cares about that community stays where she is?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, there are 33,000 health care workers who are in employment relationships with DHAs, long-term care facilities, and similar kinds of clinics across the province of Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, I think residents in that area should be very comforted by the fact that this Minister of Health will not interfere in employment relationships, but will require that DHAs have accountability directly to the communities where they're providing the services. And, Mr. Speaker, that's what I have done.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, the Premier has created a cabinet structure of at least 20 ministers and now junior ministers. The Premier campaigned on reducing the size of cabinet, and like most other promises, has done the exact opposite now that he's in government. Yesterday, my leader asked the Premier for greater clarity, of which he has been evasive, and again today, he's avoiding accountability for this increase in the size of cabinet. The veil of secrecy from the NDP continues on this and on other fronts, as Nova Scotians are witnessing a disturbing trend. Mr. Speaker, will the Premier inform this House specifically what written direction he has provided to his ministers on the role and responsibility of the now 8 junior ministers?
The Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I know it's very disappointing for the member from Cape Breton North and for his caucus colleagues, and they find themselves in the position they find themselves. But the reality is, we kept the commitment that we made. We had we shrunk the size of cabinet to 12. We have put in place ministerial assistance to assist with the burden that some of the ministers have, and they do so at no cost, Mr. Speaker, at no remuneration whatsoever. And the only thing that are defrayed are some of the expenses associated with travel around the province, Mr. Speaker, or with respect to those kinds of ancillary matters, which would be the same, Mr. Speaker, for individual members of caucuses who are traveling on caucus matters, Mr. Speaker. And you know something, Mr. Speaker, that is a level of efficiency that's a level of efficiency that caucus simply isn't used to.
The Honourable Member from Cape Breton North on your first supplementary.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the Premier, I'm very comfortable in my role in this House and the role that was given to me by the people of Cape Breton North to come and hold this Premier accountable, of which he is dodging the issues and trying to step around them so he can talk as long as he wants, because Nova Scotians, what they're looking for is answers, not trying to place the blame. Mr. Speaker, the Premier, you've heard it, there is more spin and less clarity from him and his government. Mr. Speaker, we're now aware that the massive size of the executive branch of 20 ministers and junior ministers reaches into departments and operational matters, as detailed yesterday about the assignment of the junior minister for transportation, the member for Queens, to study gravel roads, just for starters. We're hearing more of it rolling out across this province. What is less clear is the level of authority extended, the budget, staffing, and reporting. Mr. Speaker, will the Premier commit to table in this House a report of costs associated with his junior ministers and the specific direction and detailed projects assignments that he's provided them?
The Honourable the Premier.
You know, Mr. Speaker, it'd be laughable if it wasn't so unbelievable. Mr. Speaker, the reality is that the Ministerial Assistants act on behalf of the ministers to take on such roles as the ministers from time to time will assign to them. They act, for example, to we're all very busy. They act, for example, to attend a meeting or an event that a minister might not be able to attend, Mr. Speaker. It's a very efficient use of members of the legislature to ensure that stakeholders, that people across the province, get the kind of representation and the kind of active engagement of a government that they never saw in the last government. Hear, hear, hear.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on your final supplementary.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I'm sure you saw the Premier's nose growing with that answer as well. Mr. Speaker, as the Premier is well aware, cabinet duties include confidentiality and maintaining it. So far, 8 junior ministers have been appointed. However, no oath of office has been administered. Yet these junior ministers will be directly involved with departmental and government projects, will be using budget resources, formulating and implementing policy, and directing staff. And as the Premier's now said yesterday, there was no cost. Today he's indicating cost. As we can see, there's more to this story, and the Premier will disclose. Mr. Speaker, will the Premier explain why he chose to balloon the size of cabinet without a proper structure and accountability mechanism in place? And what direction has he had from the Conflict of Interest Commissioner on the role, function, and potential conflict of his junior ministers?
I would remind all honourable members just to be careful in their choice of words, in their questions, or in their answers. I will recognize the Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, Mr. Speaker, I think the easiest and most reasonable way for the member opposite to resolve this question is to simply look at the budget for the cabinet in this government, and what they will find, Mr. Speaker, is it is for 12 members of the Executive Council, unlike the amount that was expended by that government on their Executive Council.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay.
Mr. Speaker, my My question is for the Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, during the debate on transportation and infrastructure renewal estimates, the Minister gave a rather extensive soliloquy in response to a question. It was on many subjects, Mr. Speaker. It had to be, because it was very extensive. However, Mr. Speaker, the Minister spent some time talking about snow fighters and the work that they do. So my question to the Minister is, Mr. Speaker, could the Minister tell Nova Scotians if he feels that we're going to be having an inordinately warm winter this year?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member opposite for that question, I think. I'm not into weather forecasts. I'm aware of the fact, of course, that when it comes to soliloquies, I perhaps can wax poetic like the best of them. However, this is an issue that has attracted some attention within the department. It's a training course that has received some merit. The people that have received the course, the men and women who have received the course, have benefited from it. And it's a worthwhile program that hopefully will make sure that we are efficient and that we have our snow removed in a timely fashion from the roads and streets in this province.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the reason I asked the Minister about the weather is quite simple. He plans to spend $15 million less on snow and ice control this year than was spent last year. Snow and ice control is very important, Mr. Speaker. It's important for the safety of Nova Scotians and, in a very unpredictable season, to have proper winter management on the roads. Mr. Speaker, in the case the Minister thinks that last year was an exceptionally snowy year, I'd like to remind him that in 2007 and 8, the province spent $17.7 million more than they planned to this year. Mr. Speaker, my question is, would the Minister please explain to all those snow fighters and to all Nova Scotians why he doesn't take their safety seriously and why he has reduced their expenses by 30% this year?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member opposite from Glace Bay for this important question. When snow removal budgets are determined, the process that I've been explained to me is that they look at an average over the five-year period. They drop the high and the low, and the remaining three numbers, they work through that to come up with the budget for that coming year. That has been the process for the Department of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal, not just with this government, but with previous governments. I'm also aware of the fact that when it comes to this important issue, it's always important to make sure that we have the respect and time for these men and women who are doing this job. This is a difficult job. They will have the proper equipment. There will be the proper number of hours and overtime hours, and Nova Scotia roads and streets in this province will be safe during the snow season.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on your final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, that is quite a rosy and probably unrealistic assumption what he has to do with the realities of winter in Nova Scotia when he cuts the department's expenses by 30% and instead takes on the job of Cindy Day predicting the weather in Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. So, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to ask the minister, why is it, Mr. Speaker, that this minister and the government are going to leave Nova Scotians in this province ill-prepared for this winter?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Now, Mr. Speaker, I'm getting some rabbit tracks. My neighbour, Peter Coad, will be interested in the fact that I listen to him with his weather, but I think I'm more of a Rube Hornstein than Cindy Day, but this is an important matter. You know, let's look at what we have ahead of us when it comes to the unpredictability of situation when it comes to weather in this province. And, I look at the situation, and I know that when the time comes that our roads will be properly maintained, they'll be sanded, they'll be salted, and they'll be done in a safe manner. The issue, of course, that I'm concerned about is the member opposite is making light of a fact that, of course, we have to be very clear with. Mr. Speaker, I want you to know this is a concern that will be addressed. This is a concern.
Order, please. The Honourable Minister of Transportation. The Honourable Minister of Transportation has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is an important issue, and the member from Glace Bay is asking his usual fourth question. So I look at the fact that when it comes to the Sammy snowplow program, you'd be in one schoolyard when one of those snowplows arrives in, and the man or woman behind the truck gets out, behind the wheel, gets out of the truck and says, "We're going to tell you about safety in snowplows, and it's nothing to be made light of. It's a very valuable program."
The Honourable Member for Argyle.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. It's a pleasure to stand today and ask a question to the Minister of Health. Trying to back up the Honourable Member for Digby Annapolis, the residents of Digby Neck feel that they have been abandoned. In 2002, the Progressive Conservative government tried innovative ways to address the challenges in Digby County, such as the implementation of a nurse practitioner pilot in Digby Neck. Now, Karen Snyder is a well-respected nurse practitioner in Digby Neck who is well-engaged in the community. Karen built a home and wanted to stay. Karen was told that her services were no longer needed by the District Health Authority. The residents now want to know what happened to Karen and that they want to have a full-time nurse practitioner in place. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister. Will the Minister get personally involved in getting this issue resolved for the residents of Digby Neck?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, as I said previously, I have spoken with members of the Community Health Board, with the warden, with members of the Liaison Committee, and I've also spoken with the CEO of the District Health Authority. I cannot discuss personnel matters here on the floor of the House. Mr. Speaker, the employment and employee relationship is between the DHA and this individual. I've asked the DHA, who made the decision, to meet with the community, and, Mr. Speaker, those meetings will occur fairly soon, perhaps as early as tomorrow, Mr. Speaker, or Friday, Mr. Speaker, and I will not prejudge the outcome of those discussions. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Argyle on your first supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Minister for her answer, that she is getting personally involved in this issue. But, Mr. Speaker, the NDP campaign on promises of keeping emergency rooms open. There was even a TV advertisement that listed the hospitals that had closures previously. The NDP have not changed anything, and things continue to be the same or getting worse. The nurse practitioner program that provided treatment and health care to residents of Long and Briar Islands of Digby Neck was well received by the community and was one of the first programs in the province to be implemented because our government recognized the importance of the service in that area. What steps will the minister take to ensure that the residents of Digby County are treated fairly and have accessibility to health care services?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, as a former Minister of Health, the Honourable Member would know full well that the DHA provides the services into communities around the province. And Mr. Speaker, I have encouraged the DHA to be accountable to the community, to meet with the community, to have a fulsome discussion with them, to have an open mind. I've also encouraged members of the community to meet with the DHA, to have a fulsome discussion, and to do so with an open mind. And, Mr. Speaker, that will occur, and I will not prejudge the outcome of that process, and we'll see where it goes. And I believe that's the most constructive role that this minister can play, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Argyle on your final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, being a previous Minister of Health, my arms, my shirt would have been rolled up and in that community and trying to find a solution. Mr. Speaker, in the release issued by Southwest Health, it states, "These changes to the schedule will create concern in the community." May I remind the Minister of Health that she must adhere to her ministerial oath, that she ultimately bears the full responsibility for the actions of the District Health Authorities under the Department of Health. Residents of Digby Neck are told that there is no nurse practitioner to go to Digby Hospital.
Order, please. The Honourable Member for Argyle has the floor.
Mr. Speaker, if you ask the member for Digby Annapolis whether I've been down to his community when he had a problem, he would say yes. You just look over at him. Mr. Speaker, unless it's close. Now, Mr. Speaker, if they can't see their nurse practitioner, they've got to go to the Digby Hospital. But the Digby Hospital emergency room is closed most of the time. It's going to be closed over 9 times this week. Mr. Speaker, they either got to drive to Annapolis or Yarmouth now. Annapolis is closed most of the time. Mr. Speaker, my question to the minister, is there not another consultant that you could hire to get this job done?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we pay District Health Authority staff very well to do their jobs. And, Mr. Speaker, part of their job is being accountable to the community, Mr. Speaker. And I have communicated that very clearly to the District Health Authority. And part of the accountability process is meeting with the community, hearing their concerns, and taking it from there, Mr. Speaker. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Halifax, Clayton Park.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Health as well. Earlier today in the House, in her ministerial statement, the Minister did brief us as members of the House on the status of the H1N1 vaccine for our province. Given what we do know, we know that other provinces are already experiencing a second wave and that it's only a matter of time before it hits Nova Scotia as well. All Nova Scotians will have the opportunity to receive a vaccine, and it is in Nova Scotia's best interest that everyone be vaccinated. But my question today for the minister is, can the minister please explain how she will monitor the uptake of the H1N1 vaccine in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I want to thank the Honourable Member for her question. Mr. Speaker, we have, as a province, we were the first province to experience an outbreak of H1N1 in the country, and we have in place a process of surveillance in terms of continuing the monitoring of where there are clusters, and as H1N1 moves across the country from west to east, we anticipate indeed that we will see more cases here in the not-too-distant future. And Mr. Speaker, immunization is the key to reducing and preventing the extent of the outbreak of H1N1, and public health officials and DHA officials, all of our health care providers across the province, will be feeding back information to the chief medical officer with respect to the uptake of the H1 vaccination. It's a priority for us to ensure that people get vaccinated. It is the best defense we have against this virus, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Halifax, Clayton Park, on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Across Canada, plans are being rolled out to vaccinate every citizen, and clinical evidence is showing that younger groups are most at risk, while anecdotally, they are also the most reluctant to get vaccinated. Reaching this target group of young people through social marketing will be crucial. My question to the minister is, will the minister please inform the House how she plans to measure the success of the media campaign that will be in place to reach younger, more reluctant people?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, there are a variety of targeted groups, I would say, young people being one group, young people and parents. But additionally, we want to make sure that our First Nations community, our homeless populations, and people who are in the shelters, Mr. Speaker, also are vaccinated. The Department of Health Promotion and Protection through Public Health have developed a very good network of contacts and plans in conjunction with the district health authorities to ensure that all of the populations, including vulnerable populations and hard-to-reach populations, are very much a target of this campaign to ensure that all Nova Scotians get vaccinated, because that is the best protection we all have against the H1N1 virus, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Halifax, Clayton Park, on your final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I'm glad to hear that all of the hard-to-reach groups will be targeted. But I am particularly concerned with young people who may have a reluctance or an aversion to having the vaccination in the first place. And Mr. Speaker, we're very fortunate in Nova Scotia to be about 2 weeks ahead of schedule in terms of receiving the vaccine here. And my concern is that if the uptake is not happening, that we need to adjust the media messages and the social marketing efforts to reach young people and perhaps others as well. You can't just wait for data to arrive from the DHAs because time will be of the essence. My question to the minister would be, could she please share with us her plan for responding to any possible low uptake rate, either geographically or by age group?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I want to assure the Honourable Member that the safety of all people in the province is our primary concern. We understand that there are particular target populations that in particular can be hard to reach. Mr. Speaker, we have a social marketing campaign that will be running in conjunction with the social marketing campaign of the federal government. We will be monitoring very carefully the uptake in terms of vaccinations, and I would encourage all of the members of this chamber to promote the need for vaccination with their constituents and all of those groups that we come into contact with, Mr. Speaker, because vaccination against H1N1 is the absolute best policy. It's the best protection we have against this particular form of influenza, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And, Mr. Speaker, my question through you will be to the Minister of Fisheries and Agriculture. Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Minister of Fisheries and Agriculture knows firsthand the devastating impact that the seal population can have on the fish stocks. While he was a member of the opposition, he agreed with the government that something needed to be done. My question is this. Now that he's in the minister and no longer sitting on this side of the House, what has been your action so far?
The Honourable Minister of Fisheries and Aquaculture.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and through you to the member opposite. The particular issue that the member is alluding to regarding with the seal issue regarding Hay Island, that I want to just refresh the new members in this House that in 2007, there was a unanimous resolution supporting a humane seal harvest on Hay Island. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West on your first supplementary.
Well, that's right, Mr. Minister. I remember that resolution in 2007. I was one of the ones that voted for it. But I didn't ask him what he did in 2007. I was asking him what he did since he became minister. And I don't think he could answer that.
Due process.
Anyway. Right now, Mr. Speaker, my question to the minister is this. Hay Island, an area off of Cape Breton, there was a limited seal hunt that took place. Now, with the rate of growth of the seal population, it may well prove that limited hunt was not enough. My question to the minister is, can he pledge to this House today his support to the hunt, and also can he commit to expanding it so that if the seal population continues to grow?
The Honourable Minister of Fisheries and Aquaculture.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And to the member opposite, I just want to refresh the member's opposite memory, and I think we had this question somewhere similar in the budget estimates. My very first call as the Minister of Fisheries was to the Honourable Minister Shea in Ottawa, and I can tell all the members here that this particular topic was on the agenda then. And I have since then gone to Ottawa in the last 3 weeks, and I aggressively took a proactive approach and asked the minister for this topic to be on the agenda in PEI, which I just participated in a few days ago. This is on my radar. I'm very aware of this issue. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I truly believe that it is on the Minister's radar. I'm just hoping he doesn't flick the switch off. The question, Mr. Speaker, is that this is an important issue. Part of the issue is knowing in enough time in advance so that the hunt can take place. And we need this minister to sit down with the Minister of Environment and make sure that this hunt can take place sooner than later. So my question is the minister, and my question at this time is to the Minister of Environment, and my question is the Minister of Environment in support of the seal hunt on Hay Island?
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Thank you again, Mr. Speaker, and I want to inform the members of this House that I have a very close relationship with the Minister of Environment. Also, I just want to point out, Mr. Speaker, that the member opposite on this particular issue, I kind of give you a highlight or review of this resolution was passed unanimous in 2007, Mr. Speaker. I also want to point out that the member opposite, his particular government, had 10 years to deal with this issue, Mr. Speaker. My very first phone call was to the minister, the federal minister. It was on the agenda then. It was on the agenda now. And this particular minister, Mr. Speaker, will not take 10 years to deal with the issue. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove.
Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Education. Yesterday's Stats Can report shows that Nova Scotia has the second highest tuition in the country. Our students are paying $779 more than the average Canadian undergraduate. Now, the government must think this is okay because they are quick to take credit for tuition reductions, but they fail to say what they will do to bring our tuition down to the national average. Waiting for other provinces to raise their tuition fees isn't good enough. My question to the minister, how are you going to reduce tuition to meet the national average?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I thank the Honourable Member for the question. It's actually a proud time to be a Nova Scotian because we were the only province that actually saw a tuition decrease, and I want to fully commend the former government for taking the initial steps towards the lowering and freezing tuition costs in Nova Scotia. We're fully committed to making sure that they meet the national average within the next 2 years. And certainly, we've taken a lot of steps, and I have to say we're building on the foundation of the previous government. In terms of increasing access to university, freezing tuition, and lowering it as much as we can with the educational trust that's in place. So this is going to enable more people to go to university and stay in our province when they graduate. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Nova Scotia's tuition fees dropped by a mere $181 from last year. Now, that's going in the right direction, and the previous government deserves some credit for that. But that's little consolation when our students are paying the second highest tuition across the country at $5,696 average tuition. Mr. Speaker, this limited progress was due to the fact that universities were able to negotiate a 3-year funding agreement. So undergraduate students knew that even though their tuition was high, it at least would not be going up again, and some knew they might even see a small decrease. So my question to the minister, will you commit to renegotiating a multi-year funding agreement with our universities beyond 2011, yes or no?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think the members of this chamber know full well by now that I don't give a simple answer to complex issues. And certainly the MOU enabled the universities to freeze tuitions. And, you know, it's interesting that, you know, we're being criticized on the one hand for securing the stability of university funding for the next year, but on the other hand, the opposition parties are recognizing that that goes a long way to making sure that tuition is affordable in this province. And this is the first time that Nova Scotia has not been the highest university tuition in Canada. Ontario has that distinction. So I think we need to, you know, our progress is slow, but it's going in the right direction, and we're very proud that at least we're second, and hopefully it's going to be much lower in the future. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Bedford-Birch Cove on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. With all due respect, waiting for other provinces to raise their tuition fees isn't good enough. And you were not criticized. The government was not criticized for having an MOU. They were criticized for paying it out a year early, contrary to the Deloitte and Touche report. Mr. Speaker, while this government is busy taking credit for lower tuition fees, they've conveniently forgotten to address graduate tuition fees. Average graduate tuition in Nova Scotia increased by $334 over last year. On average, Nova Scotia's graduate students pay $2,060 more than their counterparts across the country. My final question to the minister: will the minister admit she is playing students off one against the other for the NDP's political advantage, and when will she lower all tuition for all students?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think we should actually be listening to the students on this, and they're choosing Nova Scotian universities. We're increasing the numbers who are coming both from out of province, from other parts of Canada, and also from around the world. And they recognize that internationally we have centers of excellence in all our 11 universities. We're very proud of the standards and the programs that they offer. And certainly our enrollment is going up, and so the students from right across Canada, if not the world, are choosing to come to Nova Scotia. So they do not see the tuition as a major barrier. Of course, we're trying to lower them and encourage even more students to enjoy a post-secondary education. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Cumberland South.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the minister responsible in the province of Nova Scotia for volunteers. Yesterday, I raised the issue of the plight of 1,100 provincial ground search and rescue volunteers who are without liability insurance and are asking the province at this time to provide them with insurance coverage, or they're saying they will need to withdraw their services. In Monday's Cape Breton Post, Paul Venal, spokesman for Cape Breton Search and Rescue, stated the reason for this follows a lawsuit against the Golden Search and Rescue volunteers in British Columbia earlier this year. Mr. Speaker, as Mr. Venal said, when you're volunteering, you have a chance to lose your house. It's scary. We all have to realize, Mr. Speaker, the very valuable service ground search and rescue provides, the millions of dollars that are saved in this province, but especially the human resource aspect of this whole issue. Mr. Speaker, I'm asking the minister today, will she advocate within her department and the government to ensure this association is treated with the respect they deserve and make insurance a top priority for the province of Nova Scotia government?
The Honourable Minister responsible for volunteerism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll speak generally to the issue, but certainly if the Honourable Member wants more details on ground search and rescue, I may refer that to the Minister responsible for EMO. We've known for many years that access to insurance has been a problem within the voluntary sector. At the moment, quite frankly, it is much more stable than it had been 2 or 3 years ago, in that most organizations are able to get the insurance that they're looking for at lower prices than they were being charged some years ago. But it is an issue that the government is reviewing very carefully, because it's a pressure point for thousands of organizations that keep our communities running and provide very critical programs and services across the the province. So it's an important issue. We're taking it seriously, and in due time, we hope to be able to provide some further options for these organizations. But if you're talking directly, specifically about ground search and rescue, I think the minister responsible for EMO would be a better person to answer that question. Thank you.
The honourable member for Cape Breton, or for Cumberland South. Sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And the question I asked of the minister was whether she would support these very valuable volunteers, which Mr. Speaker, are under her direction as she's representing them in the province. And so I was asking if she would offer her support at the cabinet table for the request they're making. Mr. Speaker, yesterday in question period, I had asked the Minister of Service of Nova Scotia, who is responsible for EMO, when she became aware of this issue. And I'll quote, she said, Mr. Speaker, I found out about this situation yesterday morning with the news release that went forward. The spokesman of the group sent me an advance release of that probably half an hour before it was released. That is the time I found out. So I'll table that, Mr. Speaker. And, Mr. Speaker, in the October 19th edition of the Metro, they quote the minister saying, she said she's been aware of the issue since coming into office in June. This has been on my radar, and this is an issue we need to be looking at and making sure we're supportive of the ground search and rescue, she said. So, Mr. Speaker, my question to the Minister of Service Nova Scotia responsible for EMO is, will you make this a top priority with your department through AMO? Will you meet with the ground search and rescue immediately to resolve this very important issue?
The Honourable Minister responsible for EMO.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I will try to answer the multitude of questions coming from the Honourable Member. Just to clarify, the issue of insurance for ground search and rescue was on my radar very early in my mandate in terms of making sure that first responders are adequately insured. The issue around withdrawing the services was only brought forward to my attention on Monday. They're two very different issues. Now, in terms of top priority, absolutely. As soon as I found out about this difficulty, I called the staff, and I've had a meeting already with staff. They are exploring different options four or five on the table right now. Now, the options need to be discussed along with the president of the Ground Search and Rescue, who contacted me immediately after question period yesterday. So at this time, staff at EMO is organizing a meeting with the incoming president of Ground Search and Rescue. Thank you.
The honourable member for Cumberland South on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, again to you, to the minister responsible for EMO. I'm sure everybody appreciates the minister meeting with their staff, but we need Mr. Speaker, her to meet with the ground search and rescue so this can be averted as soon as possible. And, Mr. Speaker, it's unfortunate that the department would wait for them to call when they know it's an issue. Surely you can pick up the phone and call them and say, let's get together today and let's resolve this issue. Mr. Speaker, the executive director has stated that they get $54,000 a year from the government, and they believe liability insurance would cost in the area of $30,000. Mr. Speaker, I think we'd all agree that where volunteerism is having so many challenges in this province today, this is 100% volunteer group that I know raised many dollars in my own area and offer great service, and they are asking Mr. Speaker to be covered liability-wise, so they can do their job and not worry about lawsuits. So, Mr. Speaker, my question again to the minister is this. If you truly value the work of the 1,100 volunteers of Nova Scotia Search and Rescue, will you today commit to extend liability insurance to the dedicated volunteers of this wonderful association so they can know they can continue to do their great work on behalf of Nova Scotians without fear of any such liability issues?
The Honourable Minister responsible for EMO.
Thank you, and thank you very much for the question. This issue, when it was brought forward to me at the extent that it is, was like an onion. When I started peeling back the layers, I found out that this issue has been going on for 15 years. The issue of insurance is definitely going to be taken care of. We are going to be... excuse me, Mr. Speaker. I know that I'm to respond to the honourable member's question, but I would like to also add from a comment coming from the floor that I did not know the extent of this problem. I'm finding that it is a problem that's been longstanding. It's been a 15-year situation. There was no budget line in the budget coming in May 4th for any issue of insurance or any extra funding for ground search and rescue. So what I'm saying, and I would like to answer the question with this, I am meeting with the President, and I will be meeting to explore options, and the support of ground search and rescue is a mandate for me and for this government. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Preston.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Economic Development, Economic Development and Rural Development. One of the most important things that government can do for business in Nova Scotia, especially small business, is providing mentoring services. If entrepreneurs are assisted with such things as development business plans, they can be set up for long-term success. My question to the Minister is, who are the people mentoring businesses, and what is their experience and background in the private sector?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm pleased to rise to my place. The response to the question is that NSBI does a very good job on mentoring people in business. They have a wealth of people from a diverse background in the business community. And also through Economic and Rural Development, we also have a mentoring program there as well.
The Honourable Member for Preston on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to highlight a specific example of a business plan that seems to be a little bit odd. The Minister should know this one well, since the Crown Corporation, whose business plan bears his signature. When I was looking at the business plan for the Nova Scotia Art Gallery, what jumped off the page was a projected revenue increase of the gallery shop of 862% over last year's actual revenues. Within the plan, there was no mention of how they plan to accomplish this, and there was no justification for such a drastic change in revenue. My question is, since the Minister has previously stated how important the business plans are and how important mentoring is, is he able to explain the dramatic increase in revenue?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And the Nova Scotia Art Gallery has been operating over the last number of years with deficits. This is nothing new for the Nova Scotia Art Gallery. One of the things that the Art Gallery is doing is they are preparing a business plan because they certainly have grand plans for the future. And my request or my access to the Nova Scotia Art Gallery is to come forward with those business plans once they're complete.
The Honourable Member from Preston on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I looked into this issue myself and found that there is no expected change in the operation of the gallery shop. The numbers reflect the change in how salaries are allotted in the budget. Nowhere does the business plan speak of the fact that the Minister of Tourism, Heritage and Culture has published a document that looks like there will be an extreme boost in revenues. I would like to think that the Minister of Economic and Rural Development would insist on more transparency in a planning document. This example speaks of the Minister's failure to lead by example, and is troubling since he is precisely the Minister who should be taking the lead when it comes to mentoring small businesses. My question is, if the Minister is not willing to be transparent and accountable with his own business plans, how can we expect him to provide any leadership with small business mentoring programs?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, both in tourism, culture and heritage and in economic and rural development, I place great emphasis on the staff that are employed there. I got the utmost confidence in the staff. They work with people and individuals and organizations such as the Nova Scotia Art Gallery, such as people from the private sector. They provide a mentoring. We also have, Mr. Speaker, we have options within the we have the small business storefront operations as well. We've got RDAs. Mr. Speaker, we are well equipped in this province to not only offer day-to-day mentorship, but also offer guidance for those individuals and organizations that are producing business plans. We do that, we will continue to do that, and the staff do that very well.
The Honourable Member for Cumberland South.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, through you, my question is for the Minister of Health. Mr. Speaker, the Minister would be aware that when Nova Scotians are hospitalized out of province, for example, in Moncton, New Brunswick, which happens quite often in my part of the province, in northern Nova Scotia, particularly Cumberland County residents, that when they are sent out of the province and hospitalized in Moncton for everything from orthopedic procedures to cancer treatments, that, and maybe she's not aware of this, but when they are placed in facilities and they have to be transferred between facilities, for example, between the Moncton City Hospital and George Dumont, that the New Brunswick government is charging Nova Scotia citizens $750 for the trip each way. Is the minister aware of that?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And no, I wasn't aware of that, but I thank the member for bringing that to my attention.
The Honourable Member for Cumberland South on your first supplementary.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have a feeling that that was the easy part. I want to table some billing, Mr. Speaker, that Mr. Ross Hunter and Mrs. Dorothy Hunter, his wife of Spring Hill, are facing a huge challenge today. Mrs. Hunter was hospitalized early this year in Moncton in midsummer at the George Dumont Hospital. She then had to be transported between the Moncton City Hospital and the George Dumont for her cancer treatments. Now, Mr. and Mrs. Hunter are seniors. They're on a fixed income, as I know the Ministry can appreciate. And, in fact, as they transferred Mrs. Hunter, Mr. Hunter offered on many occasions to take her south, and they told him not to worry about it, that it was something that was covered. Then he found out that that they are being charged, I'm sorry, it's $650 per trip each way, so a bit different from what I said. The total amount, nevertheless, I just submitted the bills, Mr. Speaker, for the Minister's perusal, $7,800 they are being charged. Mr. Speaker, it's very unfair. But worse than that, Mr. Speaker, Mr. Hunter tried to convince him that he couldn't pay this. He was informed it would go to collections if he didn't pay immediately. I would ask the Minister if she would engage her staff to engage New Brunswick government staff to see if they can help the Hunters in regards to this issue.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And, Mr. Speaker, I will certainly have staff look into this.
The Honourable Member from Cumberland South on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Minister for that. Just for the House's information and for the Minister's, when New Brunswick residents, for example, who live in Sackville, would find themselves at the Amherst Regional, Cumberland County Regional Hospital and become inpatients, if they are transferred between that hospital and the Halifax Hospital, this province does not bill those New Brunswick residents for that service. Our rules and policy allow for those transfers as same as for Nova Scotians. So I would ask the Minister to contact, again, the New Brunswick government to ensure that Nova Scotia residents are treated fairly in New Brunswick, as we treat their residents, and particularly intervene on behalf of the Hunters, because they cannot pay this bill. They're in a desperate situation and need the Minister's help at this time. So I would ask the Minister to ensure the policy in Nova Scotia reflects New Brunswick's, and also to help the Hunters, if she will.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and certainly I'll take the request from the member under advisement. We'll look into it. I'm suspecting, Mr. Speaker, that this is probably a policy that's been in place for some time and perhaps was in place when the member was the member of a former government. And any information that they can provide us with respect to this, I would greatly appreciate. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal. On Monday, the Minister talked about funding of the new Halifax Library in his 43-minute soliloquy in response to a question about the Cabot Trail. The library is without doubt an important project, and I'm sure that most, if not all, the members of this House are very happy to see that project go forward. However, the municipality has stated that in their plans to raise their money to fund their portion of this project, they will be disposing of a number of publicly owned properties in the area. These include the current Halifax Library building and parcels which provide much-needed support to the Spring Garden Road business community. Now, Mr. Speaker, last week when I asked questions of a similar nature about the World Trade and Convention Centre, the minister indicated that he would be reviewing any matter of public interest. And so I'm wondering whether he will be reviewing these proposed land sales in this matter as well.
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member opposite for the question. I'm glad to know that that was a 44-minute soliloquy, incidentally, not 43. You must have been in my office this morning because there is a current document that I'm looking at on this very topic, a document that we'll be going over with staff when my deputy returns from where he's representing the province and myself in Vancouver. It's an issue, of course, that's of great importance. It's an issue that's of great interest to all of us in this House and, of course, to the councillors up the Hill, and it will be taken care of in a timely fashion.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I still, I guess, haven't heard the question whether he's going to review the answer, whether he's going to review those land sales. But maybe to give the minister a little bit more information, maybe he should be aware that the Halifax Memorial Library was constructed in 1951 as a war memorial in tribute to the casualties of both the First and Second World War. And while the new library would understandably mean that the current building would no longer serve as a public library, there are many other public uses for the building, or if HRM needs the fund, I'm sure that the funds from the building, they could retain ownership and lease the building. However, it has been stated that the building will be sold and possibly demolished. So my question to the minister, does he support the sale of a public war memorial?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member opposite for the question. This is an important topic, and under no circumstances we're going to in any way reflect that I am the proud son of a Canadian paratrooper that joined the forces, landed in Normandy on the North Shore, and laid in a wheat field on June 5th. So don't go down that road when it comes to memorials, when it comes to wars. We're going to make sure this is done in a timely fashion. This is something that we're going to make sure that we're going to take in a serious manner, and we're going to make sure whether it's the statue outside of that Greek British Prime Minister of the day, Winston Churchill, or that particular structure, it will be done in a tasteful, timely fashion.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I have certainly no intention of comparing our family's histories when it comes to war, but the fact is that's two questions the minister has not answered. When the minister announced that he would be looking at the convention centre, he indicated he would be reviewing municipal viewplanes and other heritage issues, and when questioned in the House, he said all matters of public concern would be addressed. Well, the current library is not only a public war memorial, but it is also the gravesite for the former poorhouse which was on that site. So my question to the minister, and I would ask that he answer this very simple question, is when the agreement is reached with the municipality, will he ensure that the heritage assets on that site are protected, the publicly funded war memorial is not sold, and the grave sites are protected? Thank you.
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member from Dartmouth East for the question, and I do share his passion and interest in history, and I want to assure him that when this decision is made and the review is underway and we look at the possibilities of what's going to happen to this piece of property, I will assure you the HRM people will be consulted. In addition to that, the heritage people will be consulted, and it will all be done in a timely fashion.
The Honourable Member for Victoria of the Lakes.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Health. In recent days and weeks, Mr. Speaker, the Minister of Health has spoken about the value of the Cobequid Multipurpose Centre as being of great value and a place to help divert patients to be assessed when other hospitals within the HRM have reached a code census. My question, Mr. Speaker, does the Minister still believe today that the Cobequid Centre in Sackville is a great asset to the people it serves.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I'd like to thank the Honourable Member for the question. As the Honourable Member no doubt knows, the community surrounding the Cobequid Multi-Service Centre is a community that has grown astronomically and continues to grow, Mr. Speaker, and that particular health care facility, that state-of-the-art health care facility that is staffed by a very devoted and committed group of health care providers, supported by a community that values that center, is of value in that community, is of value to the Department of Health, is of value to this government, and indeed to the province, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member from Victoria of the Lakes on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Minister also spoke about reviewing the hours of operation at the Cobequid Centre regarding its potential to be a 24-hour facility. And I believe that there's been reviews. However, the review has not been about extending the hours of operation to assess and treat patients. Its review instead has done just the opposite, Mr. Speaker. I'll table a document that instead tells EHS paramedics that they are not to bring patients to Cobequid after 8 p.m. Can the Minister tell us and all Nova Scotians how this is benefiting patient care and long waits at other hospitals?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, I'd like to say to the Honourable Member that what this government plans for the future of the Cobequid Health Centre is to expand the hours of operation of that centre. Mr. Speaker, we've made that commitment. We said we would do that in year one of our mandate, Mr. Speaker. We are currently in the process of doing the planning so that can occur, Mr. Speaker. And I look forward to the day, as does this government and the members of this government, to see Cobequid operating 24/7, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member from Victoria of the Lakes on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I hate to see what the long-range plan would be, because the ambulance were allowed to arrive till 10 p.m. It's being reduced. It's being taken away instead of improved. Mr. Speaker, this minister and this government told people on the doorsteps they had all the answers. Mr. Speaker, they have no answers, and the only plan we've seen so far is to spend money on consultants reaffirming what we already knew. My final question to the minister, Mr. Speaker, will the paramedics be diverted? Where will the paramedics be diverted to after 8 p.m. when all other hospitals are on divert in the HRM, and what will it cost the system for longer transport times?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, you know, the members opposite like to stand up quite often in this House and make allegations without any evidence to back them up, Mr. Speaker. But Mr. Speaker, what I want to assure the members and the public, Mr. Speaker, is that the Cobequid Multi-Service Centre, the planning to use that facility to its full capacity, Mr. Speaker, is currently underway, Mr. Speaker, and I look forward to the day when we see that centre in the not-too-distant future, Mr. Speaker, being used to its full capacity, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member from Kings West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister responsible for the Nova Scotia Gaming Corporation. It seems that the public face of gambling in this province is being normalised. The province's approach has been to show how gambling is simply one more lifestyle choice. Mr. Speaker, even substituting the word gaming for gambling has had a normalising effect. My question to the Minister is this. Is it the strategy of the province to normalize gambling?
The Honourable Minister responsible for the Nova Scotia Gaming Corporation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The gambling prevalence study done by the Health Promotion and Protection department, Mr. Speaker, shows that the vast majority of Nova Scotians can gamble without any risk to themselves, Mr. Speaker. There is a percentage, a small percentage, Mr. Speaker, about 7% who are at low, medium, or high risk, Mr. Speaker, and that is where all the efforts of government are directed. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, regardless of how socially responsible the province may be regarded right now, there are still some nagging issues to confront. Capital Health states that one in four Nova Scotians who regularly use VLTs go on to experience problems with gambling, and that nearly 40% of all money spent on gambling is by problem gamblers. Sometimes problem gamblers are high profile. The most recent public case of Mr. Pillay, who was Queen's Counsel and who embezzled $1.3 million from his clients, is one tragic example, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Pillay was known to frequent the Halifax Casino at all hours of the day. Nova Scotians are paying dearly for the abject failure to properly identify the problem gambler. But the vast majority of problem gamblers go unnoticed, all but to loved ones who bear the brunt of the addiction and end up suffering the most. There are serious concerns and they need to be dealt with. My first supplementary is to the Minister of Health Promotion and Protection. Does the Minister have a strategy to counter the province's normalization approach and the significant damage that can result?
The Honourable Minister for Health Promotion and Protection.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, I want to assure the Honourable Member that this government does not have a policy to normalize gambling in the province of Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Minister responsible for the Nova Scotia Gaming Corporation pointed out during estimate debates that the five-year gaming strategy will come to an end this spring. A strategy that will address the concerns that Nova Scotians have with problem gambling is essential. A new approach is important in light of the recent cases, and it's especially vital considering that most problem gamblers, not public figures, are more difficult to identify and treat. Mr. Speaker, my final question for the Minister responsible for the Nova Scotia Gaming Corporation is, will the next five-year gaming strategy continue on the same path as it has, or will we see a new direction from this government?
The Honourable Minister responsible for the Nova Scotia Gaming Corporation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The current five-year gaming strategy expires in April 2010. It's had some successes and it's had some failures. It's time for this government to review that gaming strategy, and the work on that, Mr. Speaker, is already starting, and we hope that all members with an interest in gaming, all stakeholders, will participate so that we can reach a provincial consensus, Mr. Speaker, on what we want to see happen over the next 5 years of our gaming strategy.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is to the Minister of Economic and Rural Development. As the Minister is aware, through the estimates debate, both the Member for Cape Breton South and I raised the concern of Williston House, an assisted living facility that works in partnership with the well-respected Cove Guest Home. Mr. Speaker, both the Cove and Williston House are not-for-profit care facilities, and the volunteer board members have been calling on the provincial government through Nova Scotia Business Inc. to forgive a previous loan that was intended to be forgiven in the amount of $250,000. Between the Cove and Williston House, 146 persons received care from 200 workers and countless volunteers. And in fairness to the minister, it's a long-standing issue, but we're now to the point that we need a near-term solution. Mr. Speaker, will the minister inform this House of the follow-up he's had with NSBI and what measures he can take to help this deserving community care facility?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And through you to the member opposite, is I've had very thorough briefings with NSBI, the client. This debt is probably about 10 years old. There's been numerous correspondence by NSBI to bring about a solution to this problem or to this issue. As a matter of fact, Mr. Speaker, I want all members of this House to know is that currently NSBI has placed an offer on the table to this client, and as as still as of today, has not heard a response from the client. I've got to say, Mr. Speaker, and I'm sorry for being long-winded here, but this is a very, very important question, is that this client in NSBI entered an agreement, as I said, approximately 10 years ago, a written agreement. They entered this agreement knowingly, as did NSBI, and I trust that both parties will work towards a resolve of this. This.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I know the Minister is aware that at the time the loans were extended, when they were amalgamated into NSBI, the terms of a forgiven loan were not put in there because they've carried them forward with their commercial policies. A settlement offer at one point of $150,000 was made on the original principal of $250,000. However, the interest charges have more than doubled the balance outstanding. The loan is preventing the Community Lodge Housing Society, which owns Williston House, from expanding their current 32-unit facility and constructing a new 66-unit facility for assisted living. Mr. Speaker, I know the Minister and his colleagues recognize the value of such facilities. However, during this period of economic uncertainty, a $7.5 million project will provide much-needed work in addition to up to 25 new full-time employees. Mr. Speaker, will the Minister commit to working with the Volunteer Board, NSBI, and his colleagues to find a suitable resolution to this problem and agree to meet with the Community Lodge Society members as soon as possible and at the convenience of the Minister, recognizing it is a pressing community matter?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Again, there's a process that is taking place here. NSBI and the client, hopefully, I certainly know from the NSBI perspective that, again, I reiterate, offers have been made. I think it's incumbent upon the other side that are setting down. There's got to be a process of give and take, of back and forth. The evidence that I've seen thus far, Mr. Speaker, has indicated that there's been a free exchange going back and forth. Again, I reiterate that NSBI has made the offer.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on your final supplementary.
And Mr. Speaker, I'm not trying to trip up the Minister. We had a long-standing problem, and I know former Ministers were trying to work through that, work through the policies, but what we do understand is that what the Minister is being told by the agency is not consistent to the amount of efforts that have been ongoing to clarify this, but more importantly, not to be hung up on volunteers that have raised money and trust for the community, for assisted living, from being able to realize an opportunity. And again, the reason for this, Mr. Speaker, and for clarity, is that the loan is a problem because the society cannot access CMHC funding with a loan that's encumbered on the same property, and they have to remove that in order to get the financing to move forward. And they're not asking for government money. They're asking to get access to capital. And again, to note, $7.5 million project at a time of economic uncertainty is not worth the government holding it up. So my final question to the Minister, in fairness, is to ask NSBI, if NSBI, for whatever reason, will not or cannot facilitate this, will he commit further to work with his colleagues in Cabinet to help find a resolution to this issue this fall so in the spring construction season can be realized and this important project proceed?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My response is that I think when you're trying to reach a resolve, I think it's a very, very important that both parties talk. There's been an offer made by NSBI. There's been no return conversation with respect to whether that offer is going to be accepted or rejected. The NSBI will continue to keep me updated on this file. I will be watching it very, very closely, and I would encourage the members opposite to encourage the client to respond to NSBI's request.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton South.
Well, we'll see if we can resolve this one. Mr. Speaker, on Thursday of last week, 38 workers in Sydney's Bell Alliance Call Centre learned that the doors would be shut and the centre would be closed. These 38 workers are being told that jobs are being shifted to other centres, including New Brunswick. and if they choose not to relocate, their jobs would be gone. Mr. Speaker, my question to the Minister of Economic Development, was the minister briefed of this decision, and if so, when?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Mr. Speaker. With respect to Alliant, I didn't hear about it until after the fact when Alliant made the decision that they were going to relocate some of their employees, and I heard about it then.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton South and your first supplementary.
I wonder, Mr. Speaker, whether you heard about it in the newspaper or whether the Bell Alliant officials called him to meet with him about the gravity of the situation regarding employment in the Sydney area. My question to the Minister again is, did the Minister meet with Bell Alliant to discuss the future of these employees who are being told in Sydney and other spots in other parts of Nova Scotia that they have to be relocated, some of them to New Brunswick? As the minister, I know he says he's been made aware of it. Was he talking to Bell Alliant, and did he make representation to Bell Alliant to stop that move?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, NSBI informed me about the relocation of some of the jobs and there would be an opportunity for those individuals to be relocated, and what I recall, Mr. Speaker, if I may, what I recall, I think I heard about it either the day before or the day off. That's what I recall.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton South, and your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, he heard about the day before or the day after. He's not sure. I want to know, did he hear from Bell Alliant about the move of jobs out of Cape Breton to New Brunswick? And if he did hear about it, he's sitting here doing nothing about it, and all he's doing is telling this House that he heard about it somewhere, and he's not saying from who. Tell the people of Sydney that you're going to do something about it.
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
You know, Mr. Speaker, I'll try to be as clear as
order, I... Order. The time has expired for oral question period.
This podcast was previously aired on Legislative Television. The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the Legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purposes of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these televised proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.